This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 47 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is a part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today we have two fun trips interviewed and in the can now, where I went to the Appaloosa Horse Club, and then I met Melody Fleckenstein, and she is an MFH. Stay tuned to hear what that's all about. And both were up in Washington State. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Thank you for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 15th and the 30th of the month, and I have my producer, Glenn, with me today. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Debbie. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. I'm so proud of you, by the way.
Why is that?
Because you just got back from some amazing conference, and maybe not everybody's heard about it yet, but I want to brag on you that the Horse Radio Network is in the top five of all podcasts. No, not just horse podcasts. Top five of all podcasts in the world, according to the conference that is the biggest conference for podcasts in the world. Am I right on that?
Yeah, we kind of figured that out when we were there because there were very few networks in podcasting. One, we started 8 years ago. Podcasting started 10 years ago, so we were early on. Mm-hmm. And there are very few networks that have produced we're almost 4,300 episodes now.
Jeepers.
We've interviewed, thanks to you, too. I mean, you have some credit in this.
Just getting started.
We also have interviewed over 6,000 guests in that period of time. And, you know, when I talk to people down there and tell them the amount of number of shows we put out and, you know, our listener base being over 130,000 now, and, you know, they just don't understand how we get it all done. And it's just, you know, it's...
Do you know how
you
get it all
done? No, I have no idea. It's just a lot of freaking hours is how it gets done. But, but it's just Jennifer and I here at the studios in Ocala, and it's thanks to the wonderful hosts like you guys. I mean, we have 20 great hosts here on the network, and I feel so blessed that we have so many terrific hosts. They're all wonderful, and they're all fun to work with. And thank you, Debbie, for helping make the Horse Radio Network one of the best.
I'm just glad to grab your coattails. It's been a fun little ride, but I'm just beginning. So, you know, I've been listening to you.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. I will tell you what. You're at episode 47. You are in the top 2% of all podcasts in the world because most of them don't make it past 6 months.
Quitters. What?
that's exactly right. So here you are now. You're at episode 47.
Yeah, well, sometimes your foot planted in my tush, but no, you didn't kick me a lot. I really enjoyed it. It took a while to get me talked into this.
Actually, everything's been great since I got you started. It was getting you started that took jumper cables.
It did. That's true. I was one of those things where I had to start, you know, talking to myself. Okay, you will do this. You must do this. It's probably going to be fun. I don't know. But it has been really fun. What a fun ride so far. And just really fun to be a part of it.
I can't tell you how many compliments you get from listeners who love your show.
And my mom called in again, and my dad, right?
And they just love your show, and I think your dad's very proud of what you're doing here. So, and the whole organization is, and you should be proud as well. It really does add a regular, steady voice, and a voice that I don't think many people had heard before, because you know your dad's been out there and your mom, but you were always kind of in the background working hard. And
I was like you and Jen back in the back room sleeping.
That's right. That's right. But now we've got you out front a little bit.
I'm so glad to be out front. And I'm so glad to actually have a market representative, if you want to call it that, of horses and people in the recreational field, because it is fun to listen to the different disciplines that maybe we don't get involved in so much. I mean, to hear your driving shows, that's a whole nother world for me. And that's been a lot of fun. And the David Saunders and some of the characters you bring into it. I think the recreational rider was unrepresented out there, kind of listening in on the other things. Yeah, so it was really fun to bring that to us.
And that's 90% of our audience.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, because our, you know, not all, most of our audience does not compete. I don't compete, right? Yeah. So yeah, I'm in that recreational category. I'm a recreational driver. So
yeah, but that's what keeps horses in our lives, which is what's so fun about doing this, is it keeps them relevant. And there's so many different directions that people take horses in their lives, too. So, you know, endless. We'll be here until we're very old and gray.
That's right. Well, let's hope so. I'm already old and gray. I mean, it'll take much to get me there. So tell me, who are we going to... Now, you did a trip, right? So this is all about your summer vacation, basically.
Yeah, how I spent my summer vacation. That's right. And I'm really excited to introduce you to a couple of really fun people. One is a dear, dear friend of mine that I've known for a long time, but I really didn't get to see her world before of where she rides up in Washington State. And the other one I just got to meet because I was up in the Palouse country. And, Carrie LaForce from the Appaloosa Horse Club is just one of those people that will now be a resource for me. And I really enjoyed her depth of knowledge up there and how important the Appaloosa breed and the registry is to a lot of our history of our country. So it's really fun. So let's get started with how I spent my summer vacation.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts' Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Recently, I met Carrie LaForce from the Appaloosa Horse Club, one of the top international equine breed registries in the world, and I met her in the state of Idaho, but I was just over the border, and they have adopted the Appaloosa as the state horse way back in 1975, but the registry predates the quarter horse registry way early in the century. I visited the Appaloosa Horse Club headquarters in Moscow, Idaho, yes, that's Moscow, Idaho, in the heart of the Palouse region in the Northwest. Fun fact? The word Appaloosa comes from the phrase a Palouse horse, referring to the breed's origin in the Palouse country. Well, welcome, Carrie LaForce. I am excited to be here in the middle of Palouse country where the Appaloosa was named for. And I'm happy that you agreed to give us a little time for Horsemanship Radio.
Thank you for asking me.
No, well, you know what? I'm privileged to be here. It's a beautiful time. It's a beautiful area. And it's a beautiful place for horses. So I'm excited about always being in beautiful horse country. But we want to dive into the Appaloosa breed a little bit. And here I am sitting in the registry and the place really where it all started. So tell us a little bit about your position here at the Appaloosa Horse Club Registry.
Okay, well, I've been here 23 years. I started in the show department when I was in college, and I was just doing some hand key of show results back in the day when that's how we still did everything. And then it's evolved into this career. And now I'm the supervisor of the performance department. And within the department that contains all of our regional shows, the show industry cross section of our company, and then also the racing division and our trail and distance programs.
Wow.
And then I also manage our national and world shows.
National and world shows.
Yes.
So this is all headquartered right out of this building here in Moscow, Idaho.
That's amazing.
So how many are in the breed registry now? How many registered Appaloosas do you
have? We have close to 700,000 registered Appaloosas that we've documented since the beginning of, you know, the registry when it was formed in 1938.
In 1938. So it's actually a relatively new registry as some of the breeds go.
Well, I guess, yes, in terms of if you want to compare it to maybe Arabians or something right. like that. But it was formed the year before the American Quarter Horse Association was formed and well before American Paint Horse Association, some of those other groups were formed. So we've been around quite a while.
Okay. You brought up a good point. What's the difference in the registry between a paint horse and an Appaloosa horse?
Well, I mean, the most basic difference is the color pattern. Appaloosas are... they have characteristics that involve a coat pattern. I guess for the layman, the difference is small spots for Appaloosas versus big spots for paint horses,
true.
You know, big patches of color.
Yeah.
Appaloosas also have other characteristics, striped hooves, which a lot of horses will have on a white leg, but Appaloosas will have on a solid colored leg, a dark leg.
And
so they'll have striped hooves.
Ah, mm-hmm. Okay.
And then they have something that's called mottled skin that will typically occur around the eyes and on the muzzle and then on the genitalia of the horses. And then...
Is it also mottled, though, under the hair sometimes, too, like that we wouldn't see? Or is it mostly in the...
You know, I can't answer that question. I know that... it's a different skin color, you know, than it's not the same as it is with a paint horse.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Right.
So,
good point.
But I guess I can't really answer that question, but that's typically where you see it is around the eyes and, you know,
people,
the muzzle.
Yeah. I've noticed it there, but I've also, I have to be careful. I think sometimes with burning, you know, and those little white spots were.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then Appaloosas also have white sclera like humans do. And so they'll have white sclera around there. The colored part of their eye, which they're the only horses that will have that characteristic.
The only breed. Oh,
okay. Yes.
All right. Great. Well, tell us a little history since we're right here in the middle of the summer in the Nez Perce area. The wheat is up to our beyond our knees now, and it just looks like Indian country out here. Tell us how these horses came to be in the Palouse area.
Well, I believe, or at least the general theory about that is that the horses came from Spain originally and that they made their way across the North American continent and they eventually ended up here in the hands of the Nez Perce tribe. Mm-hmm. And the Nez Perce tribe selectively bred them for certain characteristics, for speed, for agility, for sure-footedness, mm-hmm. For stamina. Those were some of the main characteristics that they were breeding for. And of course, color. I mean,
they're so beautiful.
Yeah. So, they wanted a horse that would be able to traverse this terrain, which if you've spent very much time here in the Northwest, we have valleys and mountains and rolling hills and steep, you know, the banks of the Snake River are steep and not a lot of vegetation and it's rocky in right. some places and then it's deep dirt in some places. I mean, I think so the goal was that they would have a horse that would be able to traverse all of that different kind of terrain.
That's a lot to ask.
It is. Yeah.
It is. You've got volcanic plateaus. And
yes.
A lot of rocky areas that I saw.
Exactly.
We drove across, you know, to Colfax and all these areas.
Well, and certainly the farm ground is not what it wasn't that then, but it would have been prairie,
right, you know,
and prairie grass and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there would have been a lot of wide open spaces in addition to mountainous terrain mm-hmm. and wilderness.
So you use these horses, or the Indians certainly use them like endurance horse. I mean, did they hunt with them? Did they?
I'm certain they must have. Yeah.
So. And the Nez Perce, I know, ended up being a bit of a warrior Indian group as well, that they use their horses as a means of tracking down and escaping from, I imagine, both the settlers that were coming in and the other Indian tribes too. So these horses need to be fleet of foot, fast.
Absolutely.
Healthy. So one thing that we were talking about earlier is they actually gelded some of the horses that they felt wouldn't do well for the breed. And so the selective breeding, you really meant that they had intent and purposes of
absolutely.
Getting stronger,
yes.
faster horses.
Absolutely.
Great. So what do we, I know that the breed almost died out.
Yes.
What happened then?
So in 1877, the Nez Perce were fleeing the U.S. cavalry and it was I guess I'm not a historian, so I don't have all of the details, but there
we
was
won't hold you to every year.
Yeah. So there
we
were
<weren't> there.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a 1,300 mile I guess, race to get away from the cavalry that was chasing them. And it started in what's now present day Oregon and went through Idaho, parts of Washington, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana.
Goodness.
And then they made it almost to the Canadian border, and then they were caught by the cavalry. And when they were caught by the cavalry and they surrendered eventually, then the cavalry, because I guess they credit much of their ability to stay ahead of the cavalry to the horses, because there were many people, women, children, elderly folks that were traveling with the group of Nez Perce. And so they credit much of their ability to evade the U.S. cavalry over 1,300 miles to these amazing horses that they had along the way. And so when they surrendered just south of the Canadian border, they didn't quite make it to safety. And then the U.S. cavalry basically disbanded their herd of horses because they felt like, again, that was one of the reasons they were able to evade them for so long. And so they really took those horses and they disbanded them and they bred them to draft horses. And they really did everything they could to breed out the characteristics that the Nez Perce had worked so hard to breed into the horses. So, and then, you know, years later in 1938 is when we first became organized as a breed association. But those folks that did that, their real intent, I guess, at the time was not only to document the lineage of these horses, but to try to bring them back to their former glory in terms of their bloodlines and their stamina and their characteristics.
Characteristic attributes of the breed.
Exactly.
And for the Nez Perce.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. And so interesting, you were talking about this 1,300 mile track being reenacted. Tell us a little bit about that.
So every year, we have what we call the Chief Joseph Trail Ride, and that trail ride is for Appaloosa registered horses only. We do offer some other trail rides that are open to all breeds, but this particular ride is Appaloosa registered only. And each year we trace 100 miles of that 1,300 mile trek that the Nez Perce took to evade the cavalry. And it starts in Oregon and it goes through all of those states until it eventually ends in Montana, south of the Canadian border. And so we ride that 100 miles of that every year. And it takes obviously 13 years to get through the 1,300 miles.
Yeah.
And this is the fourth time that we've done that whole 13-year
cycle.
Yeah. So actually this year is the 12th year of the 13-year cycle. So one more next year we'll be at the battlefield where the surrender took place. And then the following year we'll start back over in Oregon and start the whole cycle again.
Who leads these things? Who's out there?
Well, we have a trail and distance coordinator here in our office that plans the rides. We have a fantastic crew of people that have been working them for many years. And this ride is actually an interesting ride in that it's not a base camp ride. The camp actually packs up and moves every single day.
Oh, wow.
So the riders are riding, you know, 20 to 25 miles a day. Right. And the camp is picked up, packed up, moved to the next location, and then set all out again that day. And then the riders ride back into the new camp that night and they have meals and entertainment. And
sounds fun.
Yeah. So
that must be a volunteer army that you have.
Well, we have a great crew, like I said, and we have scouts that have been our scouts for a number of years. We have, and then we have folks that are local to the different areas where the ride is going through that they help us plan the trail routes. I mean, it's not always possible to stay on the exact trail, right? Because
There might be a building there.
Progress,
now.
Exactly. Progress. Or a town or a, you know.
Sure. Sure.
So, but we try to do the best we can to stay as close to the route as we possibly can. And
that's kind of fun.
And it takes a lot of local coordination. I mean, sometimes we have to cross a highway or sometimes, you know, so you have police involved, BLM, Forest Service.
Right,
I mean, there's a huge, you know, the logistics of it are pretty major.
But you're only asking them to do it once every 13 years, I suppose, in that local
area. In that location, that's true.
Yeah, so that's not a bad way to do it. And how many people go on this ride typically?
Well, we'll have anywhere from 100 to probably 250 riders.
Wow.
Just a lot of it depends upon the location, the year.
Leg.
Yeah, whatever leg it is. And, so.
Yeah.
Sometimes the price of gas.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
True. Of that's course. Flux quite a bit. So it's like nearly 50 years you've been doing this, too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, 50. This is our 51st year.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. So so somebody has to be on a registered Appaloosa to be involved in this.
Yes.
What do they need to do to get signed up for it if they want to be next
Call
year?
Us and... check our website, and we put the application forms are out on the website early, probably usually around February, March. Those applications will be out on our website, and you can see what the price is and where the location is. And sometimes folks don't have an Appaloosa. They may have another breed, but they really want to come on the ride. So we have some people that will rent a horse to you or, you know, that have a couple extras that they'll say, we'll throw them in the trailer and bring them along. And,
okay, good.
And one reallyez thing is that we work really closely with the Nez Perce tribe.
No kidding.
And so we have the Nez Perce Reservation is just south of our offices here in Moscow, and they're down in Lapway, Idaho, which is about, probably 40 miles, 45 miles south of here. And so we work closely with the foundation and, you know, with groups from the Nez Perce. So we have some of the youth that are able to come on scholarship and come on the ride. And it's been great to work with them because they bring a real historical connection between that present day and
and generational. I imagine that
absolutely
they have stories and
absolutely
that makes it even the more interesting. Now, is there alcohol involved in this, or we cut off?
We don't serve, but I suppose are people who bring some along. Yeah, so
it's camping and alcohol, you know,
exactly,
often go together. So
now we have entertainment at the ride. Okay. So we have it's kind of an interesting thing. We have this giant dance floor that is all. A big wooden dance floor that fits together like a big puzzle, and they put that up and level it every single night. So that, and then we have some entertainment, and they come out and play music, and there's dancing, and So I think they have a really good time. Yeah, when they get back to camp every night, they're not too sore.
So what's the youngest and what's the oldest that's ever been?
Well, we the youngest age limit for us is 12 because of the rigor of the ride. But I'll tell you, we have a lady that's on the ride who has been on every single ride. 52 years.
Every mile.
Every ride. She went on the very first one, and she's on this one.
That is so cool.
She's the only one.
Yeah, okay. There's one at all.
But there are some other folks that have been on many, many. But her name's Anne Michelle. She's amazing. She's the only one that's been on every single ride.
That's amazing. So she's got to be over 65. So I don't know. Never mind.
I would never guess, but.
Never mind. Well, tell me how they take care of the horses. I mean, there must be some contingencies for horses.
So we have a farrier that comes on the ride. We have a veterinarian that comes on the ride. We have people can bring their trucks and trailers depending on the. So some folks will bring a truck and trailer and they'll have a driver that will drive their rig from location to location every day. And other folks will tent it. So they'll just park their vehicle at destination camp and then they'll bring tents and they'll just, you know, rough it for the week. Mm-hmm. But we do have, and we have a doctor that's on the ride to help take care of the people. Yeah. And we bring in water trucks. So there's water. We bring in, certified weed-free hay. I mean, so all of those things to try to make sure that we're taking care of people and horses.
Happy. Yeah, happy, healthy. Well, I don't want to get away from us without talking a little bit more about the versatility of the breed.
Absolutely.
People know the color, but what do they really know about the breed? And tell me about their abilities. Tell me about their demeanor. Tell me a little bit about them.
Well, I think most people would tell you, people that have been involved with Appaloosas for a long time, they'll tell you that one of the things that they love most about these horses is that they can do pretty much anything. We have Appaloosas that are racing. We have Appaloosas that show, that rein, that cut, that rope, that do endurance. Mm-hmm. We have a national championship endurance ride every year. And next year we're teaming up with the Arabian Horse Association and we're going to, join forces and have our championship rides together. So they really do everything. They're kids' horses. They're, you know, a lot of people love them because they're, docile and have a nice temperament and they're willing. And they're speed horses. They pretty much do everything. So I would say that most folks would say that they find them to be very versatile. And I know that's sort of a catchphrase for a lot of breeds, but I think it's really true that, you find in a lot of breeds that there's a lot of specialized horses. There's the reining horse, the pleasure horse, the, English horse, the speed horse, and so you find that in a lot of associations, but here you find that, horses are doing a lot of different things. The same horse is doing a lot of different things, you know, so they're able to do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And they hold up really well.
I mean, right.
Good bone
structure. So they're strong.
That white in the hoof doesn't create any problems for their hooves and all this 100 pounds. It must not.
Have ever heard of. I mean, I think just as a horse person, generally people will say that horses that have white hooves, because I have one at home that has one white foot and it grows differently than the other 3 feet on that horse, so we deal with that foot differently with the farrier than you do the other three. So I think that there's probably a little bit of that
they're holding up,
but they, so, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And you know, color these days seems to be so popular. We're getting into an era maybe that 80-85% of horse owners are recreational.
Right.
And so they start choosing horses for their versatility, certainly, but also their color.
They want something unique
looking. Right. That's right. The blue eye or whatever. So, I mean, Appaloosas just seem to fit.
I think there's probably no two Appaloosas that ever looked alike in terms of a coat pattern or color. They look similar to one another, but nobody has the exact same spotted blanket, and you can have everything from a leopard horse that has spots all over its body to one with a blanket to one with a sprinkling of, you know, snowflakes over its hip. I mean, you know, there's something for everyone really in terms of that. And then one thing I think that a lot of people maybe don't realize, or is that we allow horses that are solid colored to participate in our events. So if you're a bloodline, Appaloosa by bloodline, so you have Appaloosa parents, but you're solid,
right.
You can still participate in our events. So I think that you don't have any throwaway horses. Mm-hmm. But those horses, I think the more and more that we're finding out about genetics and that kind of thing, those horses can be carriers,
right?
A lot of folks will say that if you have a minimally colored mare, that she'll produce more color than a loud colored mare.
That's interesting too.
So, I mean, I know there's some genetic mm-hmm. proof of that. Mm-hmm. I'm no geneticist, but I know that there's a lot of, over many years, there's a lot of anecdotal information about that that I think is being proven out recently in genetic studies.
Yeah.
There's a study called the Appaloosa Project that's actually, they've done a ton of work on genetics and color genetics, and have identified color genetics in Appaloosas and, you know, what that means in terms of whether they'll perpetuate that coat pattern or not.
Good.
It's kind of amazing.
It is. Well, I think your operation here is an amazing thing in the middle of, you know, Moscow, Idaho.
Right.
Of all places. But, you know, it's a beautiful place for people to visit. I should hope that they would come here and see your museum.
Our museum is amazing.
Yeah. It goes way back, and that you have exhibits that come through and different things going on. I see that you've got some activity going on, some big banner outside. I'll put a picture up on the Facebook page.
Museum is open, I believe, 6 days a week. And then during the summer, we actually have a live horse exhibit. So we have our pasture behind our office that has a live horse in it. And so there are a lot of things that happen during the summer with, groups that come in. And, I think last weekend or the weekend before was Appaloosa Fest. So they came in and had a picnic and took rides and, you know, so
fun stuff.
Yeah.
So I hope people will come and visit and see where the Appaloosa horse was, really came together and became a registry here, yes, which is historical, and maybe even join your ride.
That'd be great.
One of the legs, at least, of the 1,300-mile hike. And that I hope we get to have somebody from your organization on again to hear more about your activities. And,
that'd be great. Yeah. We have a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, you
a lot
do,
of stuff.
Carrie. And so we've heard from Steve Taylor before on the Horse Radio Network, and you guys just have a ton of talented, very dedicated people. I can tell by your operation. It's a small staff, but huge operation here. All the things that you do.
Right. For the we put on our national and world shows every year. We have that's a monthly magazine that we put out from this office every month, in addition to those two huge shows that we put on in Fort Worth, Texas right now.
Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your dedication to the Appaloosa.
Thank you.
And thank you for keeping the breed strong and interesting. And we would love to have you back sometime.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Carrie LaForest, being on Horsemanship Radio.
We're really excited because Sean's Omega Fields company has done something amazing for one of our test horses. His name is Cadillac. And we felt so strongly about it that we definitely wanted to bring him on as a sponsor of Horsemanship Radio. And we wanted you to know that it came in that order first, is that we were so impressed with this product and with this horse's results that we wanted to have him a part of our monthly shows. What is it about the Omega Fields product? Something's different.
Omega Fields was built around a really unique and proprietary technology. Flaxseed has been known for a long time to contain rich source of omega-3 fatty acids along with omega-6 and omega-9. Fatty acids in a near perfect balance. But historically, there was a problem using it. It's high in fat, and when it was milled into a feed product or a food product, it would go rancid very quickly. So our company had developed a proprietary technology for stabilizing this high fat flaxseed to make it usable, give it a long shelf life in a natural environment. We don't use any chemicals or additives to extend the shelf life or anything like that. It's a completely natural process. That's what makes our flax really different. It makes it usable. It makes it nutritious over a long period of time. We guarantee an 18-month shelf life so consumers can use it with confidence without it going rancid that, you know, would potentially harm the horse. So quality of manufacture, every single thing in that product, Omega Horseshine, is food grade. It's made at a food grade facility with great care of product quality. The stabilization technology makes that omega-3 nutritional value locked in and usable for a long period of time. So proof is in the pudding, so to speak, that it really works. You'll see dramatic results in a fairly short period of time.
What is better than getting together with friends and horses for a chase around the forest? Absolutely nothing, says our next guest, Melody Fleckenstein. Melody Fleckenstein has the distinction as a master of foxhounds and rides at the Woodbrook Hunt Club in Lakewood, Washington. That's hard to say. Where they use scent drag hunting on a beautiful property south of Seattle. And though it's the oldest club in existence west of the Mississippi, but they're really progressive using social media, and they keep the best of the sport, you know, the best parts of fox hunting alive and well by involving the young riders in the sport. And they're all having fun with horses.
So I'm privileged today to be with Melody Fleckenstein, a long, long life equestrian woman who has transferred her life from the East Coast to the West Coast some years ago. What is that, Melody, 20, 30 years ago?
Over 30 years ago.
She moved to the West Coast, and I met her in Seattle and was familiar with her through business and friendship, but later on understood that she had an equestrian life as well. And I would love to share that with people. Tell us a little bit about how you got into horses originally.
I think you actually have the horse gene when you're born. And, you know, my parents were always waiting for when, you know, I got 16 and got a boyfriend or got a car that I would give up the horses, but I never did. There was no horses in my family. Nobody rode in my family. And I would do anything to ride. So they did let me start riding when I was probably 10 or 11 years old, and I just never looked back. And I rode in college. I've ridden Western when I was in high school and college, and showed a little bit. Then I moved and showed actually Tennessee Walking Horses, Gated Horses, Western Pleasure. When I moved to the East Coast, I had a friend ask me if I wanted to try fox hunting. And I was probably in my 20s working down on Wall Street, and they had I got hooked. I mean, the first time I hunted, I was absolutely hooked on fox hunting. And I hunted with two hunts. One was called Beaufort. When I moved my horse from living in Pennsylvania at the time down to Connecticut, or from Connecticut to Pennsylvania, and I stopped at this one farm, and it turns out that the guy that owned the farm was the master of foxhounds.
Master of foxhounds.
Master of foxhounds. Yeah. And he said, you know, yes, I'll board your horse, but you must hunt with me. And he got me hooked on it. And then I hunted in upstate New York with Rombout Hunt. So Beaufort Hunt was my first hunt, and then Rombout Hunt. Now a member of Woodbrook. I'm a master of foxhounds at Woodbrook Hunt in Lakewood, Washington.
Tell us about the master of the hounds.
The master is the one that's in charge of the hunt, particularly on the hunt day. You've got the master of foxhounds who's in charge of everything that has to do with hunting. And then you've got the staff, the huntsman, who controls the hounds. You'll have joint masters and field masters, which the nice thing about fox hunting is we try to make it available to all levels of riders and all ages of riders. So mm-hmm. I've taken a 4-year-old on a lead line on a hunt.
Really?
And we've got a British woman who's one of my senior advisory masters, Joanna Herringstad, who is in her 80s, and she's still leading a second flight, jumping flight. So, you know, you can really see every type of horse and every discipline and every occupation from the riders in there.
That's amazing. So 4 to 80. Yeah.
No limits.
And what is it that hooked you that first time when you're up in Pennsylvania? Was it the exhilaration of the?
I think so. I think it was like my younger daughter, Nicole, the first time she hunted, and she'd been showing for a couple of years, and she came back from the hunt and goes, why would I ever show when I could do this? I think it must have been you're galloping and trotting and cantering, and you're with a group of your friends, and it's beautiful countryside, and you come back and you have a hot hunt breakfast. And it's just kind of the best way you can spend a day on a horse. And it's just, and I think it really, because the riders today, if they're only trained to ride in a ring and they know it's 4 strides, 5 strides, diagonal. And out there, the kids develop an eye because you don't know when that log is coming up. Is that 4 or 5 strides? You don't really care. And the horse may move up. So the best, I mean, George Morris grew up fox hunting.
There you go.
So you've got, if you look back at a lot of the older best riders, they grew up fox hunting and they developed that eye. Mm. And for the kids, and actually for the adults, it doesn't matter if you have a Palomino or a Pinto or Appaloosa or what have you. You just want a good, safe horse to ride on.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You know, you don't have to have the correct clothes or anything like that. You've got to have certain dress standards. But other than that, it's just enjoying yourself, watching the hounds work. It's all about watching the hounds work.
Yeah.
And just enjoying, you know, a centuries-old sport.
Yeah, it's a cool tradition.
Yeah.
So tell us, what is watching the hounds work look like? Is that leading you?
We do a drag hunt because you're not allowed to hunt dogs with or live animals with dogs in the state of Washington. So we lay drag lines. But it's really about appreciating a good hunting dog or hunting foxhound in this case. So you will, when I hunted in upstate New York with Rombout, it was live hunting, and so was Beaufort. So you know pretty much the huntsman is going to know where the foxes live, and he will take the pack and he will cast them, and they will, you know, go and look for the fox, smell the fox, and then you'll just, one of them will just start, you know, barking, we call it giving voice, and they'll go streaming out, and your heart just starts pounding because then you gallop after them and the hunting horn's blowing. And the nice thing is everybody can enjoy it. If you don't want to jump and gallop, there'll be a flight that will know exactly or pretty close to where you're going to end up. And they'll be there to watch the horses and the riders come in, or they'll be able to watch a lot of the kids jump or something like that. So it's just really the thrill of having those hounds hit the scent, give voice, chase them, And then we don't have a real fox at the end, so there's always treats for the hounds when they come to the end of the line.
Yeah.
It's just very, very exciting. So it's a sport in that respect, but the hunters are the hounds.
Right, right. So, okay, so you're taking the hounds' leads on that. How many hounds am I looking at when I'm thinking about this?
Oh, some of the packs are 30 or 40.
Really?
We'll hunt, you know, 12, 15, 10, 12, 15.
Yeah. So that's loud, right? I mean, they all bark.
If they all give voice. Yeah. If they all give voice, it's very loud, very exciting. So there's some great videos on the internet to listen to that, too.
I imagine. Yeah. There you go. YouTube that one.
Yes, YouTube that, yes.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And the horses, they, how do you desensitize to all those things that you just, I mean, that's sensory overload, what you just
described. It is definitely sensory overload. And usually we have a flight for called Hilltoppers, which is Green Horse and Green Riders. And we encourage people to start in the summer on trail rides where we're riding over the terrain that we know we'll be hunting on. And if I take a young horse, like I got a willing partner horse from your dad. Mm-hmm. And so right now he's been going just at the back. So he knows that the tiger at the back of the pack is not going to attack him.
Right.
He has to be fine with going in the back, and then he's allowed to move up to the middle, and then they can lead. But I'm always making sure that they go back to the back. So you don't have the issues of, you know, horse that somebody comes and says, my horse has to be in the front. Well, your horse can't be in the front because that's the field master's position.
Yeah.
So that's really, it's just a long time. It'll take, you know, 2 to 3 years at least to develop.
Is that right? Yeah. So what age is a good developed horse looking for? Is it like dressage, 7, 9?
No, it depends on the mind. You can have a good quarter horse that could do it in a year or two.
Yeah.
But you always preferably start them in the Hilltopper group, and then there'll be a second flight and a first flight. And the second flight will do cantering. Hilltoppers usually walk trot, mm-hmm. and they get to see everything going on, and they get to hear the hounds.
That's smart.
And they get to go to the check, and they have the hounds milling around, and then all the other horses. And then that flight leaves, and they have to be okay with that flight leaving them.
Right, yeah.
And they stand there quietly, and they wait for their flight to leave. I think for people that are looking for hunt horses is, if you're not one of the boldest riders, is don't buy a horse that's already hunted. Because if they've hunted, either been a whip horse or a first flight horse, that horse is going to want to go back with those horses.
Right, yeah.
And so you're better off getting a good trail horse, a backcountry horseman horse or something
good.
Like that. Or
backcountry horseman,
horse. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's another organization that does...
Yes.
Great work
they
in that they're
work,
cleaning
yeah.
trails and
yes
yeah.
they yeah they're just big champions and lobbyists for preserving wildness for riders. So those horses are pretty good. Now they don't canter and gallop a lot, but they mm-hmm. certainly are very good on trails mm-hmm. and in groups and that sort of mm-hmm. thing. So
is it tough keeping a horse sound in the hunt?
No, we're very rocky country, so we usually put pads on the front feet mm-hmm. and shoes on the back, but some horses mm-hmm. have tough feet mm-hmm. not barefoot. Mm-hmm. And that's not usually a problem. It's, you know, keeping them sound over the summers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the East Coast, they basically pull the shoes and turn them out for a couple of months and then bring it back. We do the same thing to the hounds. In the summer, they don't get exercised on horseback. They get walked out. And we walk them out and then bring, so they kind of get the summer off too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about, for the keeping your hounds sound too. You gotta, everybody's got to be healthy.
Miles and miles that they're going, yeah.
Yeah, true. So what do you think, you've seen, how long have you been in the hunt now then?
I've been hunting since, I'm 66. I've been hunting since I was 21.
That's
off and on. Yeah.
So 50-ish years you've been working at this. What's the biggest transition you've seen? Is the sport growing, shrinking? What
I
do we need
it's
to encourage?
Shrinking. What we're finding is that we're losing the sort of 25, 30 year old are dropping out while they raise kids, just mm-hmm. the financial commitment of keeping horses. So we're trying to develop some lease horses. In England, of course, it's been banned. So they're all, quote, drag hunting, which is what we do in Washington.
Okay.
And we watch that very closely. On the East Coast now, you have much more of the anti-hunting, where they're still hunting live, mm-hmm. that are trying to stop the fox hunting.
Not only because they're because of the fox, not because of the sport itself, though. Huh?
Well, because the sport will kill foxes or coyotes. It is the sport mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. So they're.
But if you just do a drag scent and there's no death involved,
okay. Yeah, that should be okay with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we need more and more drag hunts are starting.
There you go.
And a lot of it is because they're just losing. The foxes are being decimated by whatever, mm-hmm. and some of the coyotes are too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of the hunts that used to be exclusively fox. Now there's many, many coyote hunts.
Mm-hmm. And many, many coyotes.
And many coyotes, yes. Everywhere the coyotes are taking
over. Sure, they're bold
they're in
the city.
They're in downtown Seattle, yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
They're everywhere. Yeah. So I think that's it. And we're just trying to make it more of a open to, you know, anybody that wants to try it.
Oh, it sounds exciting.
We invite Western riders, and usually they get hooked on it, and then they find out, do you have an English saddle or hunt saddle or whatever? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just because it is, there's no pressure to look a certain way or ride a certain way. Mm-hmm. It's more about, you know, like I said, watching hounds work and be do well with a compatible group of people and spend the day on horseback. And it's a great way to start a week of work.
Yeah,
week as
yeah.
Fox hunter.
Yeah, great weekend. And, yeah. And they really do blow the horns, right?
Yes.
They really do.
The horns are signals to the hounds. There's certain blows that'll say, you know, come into me.
Oh.
Or, you know, gone away, great boys, keep going type of thing. So they're actually trained to it's certain commands for the hounds.
No kidding. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's not just one horn blow,
no,
go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have horn blowing contests and,
oh, fun.
You know, so yes, it's all very
fun. And not everybody has an English accent that's out there
no.
with you, right?
None of them do.
None of them do anymore.
It's every conceivable occupation that's on there, and that's the great thing. It's a melting pot sport.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your fox hunt club is?
Woodbrook Hunt Club.
Woodbrook Hunt Club started in...
Actually, they started hunting in 1911 on Fort Lewis, the Army base, and it was a cavalry hunt.
Ah.
So it was then moved, and then we were located. They wanted to build McCord Air Force Base, so we were moved then to Lakewood, and we've been there. We incorporated in 1926. And we're associated with the Master of Foxhounds in Middleburg, Virginia.
Okay.
So we have a national governing body that we have certain things that we have to, you know, mm-hmm. subscribe to as far as, you know, how we run the hunt,
mm-hmm.
how many foxhounds we have, how well they're kept, staff, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And they're a great organization, and they have, you know, yearly seminars for one thing or another. And it's, you know, just making sure that the sport will endure
mm-hmm.
here and everywhere worldwide. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I saw your Facebook page, so I know you're transitioning into social media and
yes, we are.
Getting progressive, even though you're the oldest hunt club west of the Mississippi.
Yes. And we have about, you know, close to 100 members.
That's
and,
amazing.
You know, we're going to kind of play around with Twitter and Instagram this summer. And
oh, Instagram would be perfect for you.
Yes.
Very visual.
I can, what I'm picturing is that it's just when we take off or when somebody snaps a quick picture when the hounds first give voice, or we have that 6-second vine or something like that
yeah.
to kind of really get people excited about coming out and trying it. And then we do hunter paces. We do a series of three of those, which are a marked course with the three flights that you would have in a hunt. You have your hilltopper, which is your walk trot, or as we say, we go as fast as the slowest person wants to go. And that means anybody can go, basically.
Mm-hmm.
First and second flight. So somebody will run like a 5 or 6 mile course at the perfect speed for that hilltopper. So it's a walk trot. And then you will basically see how close you get to the time. And so we have a series of three, and then you get a high point winner at the end of that. We have a hunter trials, which is like a fox hunting horse show.
Yeah.
And then a lot of trail rides and triple crown parties. And so for the hunts, it's a year-round activity. And it's very affordable when you look at it for what it costs to go to a horse show. Like a family membership is $750 and a single membership is $550. But that's 12 months.
Right.
And the ability to, you know, do something just about every weekend with other people.
Yeah, that's a terrific
yeah.
way to do family time, too. Well, it sounds fantastic. I think you probably sold a few of us anyway.
Good. Yeah, I need to get you out on
it. Yeah, that's right. I want to hear that horn, too. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today on Horsemanship Radio. ACFA champ Judy Limsky shares our trainer's tip this week on backing up for better ground manners. Welcome back, Judy Limsky. And her horse, Picasso. Picasso is probably not with you, but Judy, you have achieved so much. And we were so honored to have you on the show describing a little bit about that Picasso Award and the honor of sportsmanship that you provided to all those ACTHA riders when you were out there. But we wanted to have you back to hear some of your inside secrets, tips, anything for all of us frustrated trail riders who
sometimes come upon that one obstacle, like that chicken in the mailbox or something, you know, that you think, I just can't get it. So we want to hear from you, Judy, on a tip that you have for us today on trail riding.
Well, I have a simple training tip, and I think it will help everyone get their horse to listen and respond better. It's extremely simple. It's just back up. My tip would be to back your horse up often, even when you're not in the saddle. I mean, I back Picasso up everywhere. I back him through gates, around cones and trees, anything I can find. I back him up before I ride, when I ride, and after I ride. I mean, I like to keep him thinking and not anticipating.
Oh, that's it. So it's a listening to you moment when you're doing that backup. Okay. Yes. Is it a trust thing? Do you think there's trust involved in that too? I mean, that's listening to you, I know, but they can't see everything back there.
It absolutely is trust. And that's going to help you when you come to any obstacle that's a competitive obstacle. They're going to trust what you're asking them to do. And especially backing up. I mean, that's not a natural, you know, something you see them do every day out in the pasture.
That's right. That's right. A fairly unnatural thing, actually. So, and a lot of disciplines don't do much backing up, frankly. How did you get onto that?
The groundwork, I guess. And I could see that I started to do it at Liberty, where he would back up when I'm asking him to, just by my hands and my voice. And then now just by my hands. And so I just started adding that all the time. I mean, I back almost every gate I go through, I back him up. Mm-hmm. I have them turn. I side pass them on the ground. It just seems to help everything. That when I get in the saddle, everything seems so much better.
So we just had on the last episode, we had my dad, Monty Roberts, talking about a horse that was having trouble going through the starting stalls, which is always a forward movement, right? Race horses go forward; they don't go backwards. And he talked about finally discovering that was a trick to getting a horse not thinking about blasting through a narrow space. And he eventually got the thoroughbreds to back up just with cues from his body. I mean, in other words, untethered, unclipped. He was in an open arena just backing through L's and everything. Do you think you can, or do you work with Picasso even off the lead?
Oh, I do off the lead. I even set up Cavalettis, just set up logs in the arena. And I will have him back up and serpentine those logs at a backup.
Excellent.
And then I'll have him step over the log and then side pass each direction over the log at Liberty.
Listen to you. That is awesome. At Liberty.
I know. Sometimes I think maybe this accident I had in recovering from it, I've done so much more groundwork that he's just, he's so much better now. He's calmer and just, you know, I hope I can take that outside of the arena and back out into the trails again.
I bet you can. I bet you can. That is a great tip. And I think a lot of people will not have thought of that, but it makes good sense. It's one of those light bulb moments, you know. It makes good sense when you say it out loud. Uh-huh. And I don't advocate everybody having an accident. Let's live vicariously through Judy for this one and learn to do a little more, take a little more time on your groundwork. And I think that's a great tip, Judy. Thank you, Judy Linsky, for contributing another to Horsemanship Radio.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts. And I'm dedicated to training horses without pain. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. Western, English, the beginner, or the advanced rider, it doesn't matter. You can connect with other students online too on our forum, and there's a new lesson every week. It's a lifetime of learning for you on my Equus Online University at MontyRoberts.com.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in September. He will be on September 5th. The Night of Inspiration with Monty and Pat Roberts at Flag Is Up Farms. Then he's off to England, October 10 at Bishop Burton College, October 17th at Myers Co. College. On October 23, he will be at Hartbury College, October 29 in Marist Wood, October 31 in Ingleston, all the way up in Scotland. Meanwhile, back in California, my mom is going to be hosting a couple of events. November 6th, we've got a Horse Sense for Leaders professional development workshop at Flagazette Farms, building trust-based relationships. And then that following weekend, that same weekend right there, November 7th and 8th, we're going to have a Wild at Heart weekend with my mom's sculptress and equestrian, Pat Roberts, and a bunch of our friends. This is girls only, Glenn.
I can't come?
No. Yes, you can. You can.
I could dress in a dress.
Yeah, well, never mind.
Okay. You can see more at MontyRoberts.com. That's where you can see his complete calendar, of course. And you can also give a call, like on the phone, at 805-688-6288. And for details about today's show, go to HorsemanshipRadio.com, where you can find links, photos, and more information about our guests. As always, we love your feedback. And please follow us on Facebook under Facebook.com/MontyRoberts and Twitter at Twitter.com/Monty_Roberts. And the other way, a lot of people are listening to our shows now is on the app. So you can get the app by going to Horse Radio Network on iTunes or Android on your phones, and you can follow us along there.
That's how I do it. I love that app. And many thanks to our sponsors. We've got IFA.com, Omega Fields, and MontyRobertsUniversity.com. Be sure to visit all the other great shows, too, on Horse Radio Network at thehorseradionetwork.com. And that's www.horseradionetwork.com. Until next time, have many happy horse hours.